Points Podcast. We love to drive and talk about cars. One of the best kept secrets about motorsports is that it's one of the easiest sports to get into. We'll talk about how to do just that.
We'll dive into all sorts of car topics and interviews with the everyday people who either attend events or make the events run. Where other related podcasts focus on technical details and only interview the champions, we wanted to talk to all the other people who keep these events going.
You know, people just like us.
People who may not be first, but will always be there and are very passionate about motorsports.
And we welcome your feedback, insights, and ideas. You can email us at shiftingpoints@gmail.com. And please be sure to like us and follow us on Facebook at Shifting Points Podcast, with no A in podcast, and on Twitter and Instagram at Shifting Points, and of course, our website, shiftingpointspodcast.com.
So welcome to Shifting Points Podcast. Tonight we have Don and Brian Kuehl, a father and son team. They came out to talk to us tonight. We know them from various autocrosses in the area. Hi, guys. Hi, Don.
Hi. How you doing?
Hey, Brian.
Hello.
We do that so people can tell which one is talking, right? So you don't have to say every time, hi, this is Don. You know, like you do on the conference call?
No problem. I'm used to it.
Beep. Jess has entered the podcast.
As long as we don't have to do the thing, can everybody mute? Can everybody mute? That's crazy. So I guess we'll start with Don, right? We'll go with the father first. How long have you been doing like motorsports, and what do you do? Like, what's all the things that you do?
What do I do? So actually, motorsports wise, I never did formal motorsports until about 2008. But as I grew up as a kid, my family was, especially my dad, he did everything. And we were always working on cars. And in fact, in 1960s, we actually did a motor swap into a 55 Thunderbird. And so I was always, you know, I had older brothers and we all worked on cars. And so we all kind of did building cars and motorsports, but we never did any, but back then there wasn't a lot of opportunities for amateurs to like get involved in actually doing real motorsports. So I didn't really start doing motorsports until Brian and I actually together started back in 2008. And growing up doing motor, you know, building cars and so on and so forth, I was kind of disappointed that a lot of kids today don't know much about cars. So it was, the idea was, it's like, oh, let's do a project and let him learn about cars. So we wound up looking around and we kind of bought a car for $1 and we worked on it for about a year and built it from ground up, and we had a car. And then the question is, what are you going to do with it? Okay. And so that's when the whole motorsports thing started. And so that was like 2008. And Brian, you can kick in. You were probably just had your driver's license or maybe your permit at the time.
Yep. Basically, like he said, it's all his fault. He got me stuck on it on motorsports. Yeah, I was 15. I was thinking about my driver's license. I was just getting into cars. He had a cool E46 M3 that kind of perked my interest in cars after him driving trucks all along. I never really cared for cars until he had that car. But yeah, 15 and a half, we ended up buying a CRX for $1 and we didn't know what to do, but he wanted to do a project. So we built a tuner car, got featured in a magazine. And then I got my driver's license and I did a street survival school, and my instructor was telling me about the school thing called autocross. And after hearing about the car that I built, he basically said, it'd be a really good idea with a car that fast to try doing something motorsports related before you kill yourself on the street in it. So we went out to an autocross, and the rest is history. 12 years later, we're still doing it. We've grown a little bit in motorsports and some other things too, but all in all, just having fun with cars.
So you literally bought a car for a dollar.
I was going to say, well, back, we got to go back to that. Yeah.
It's a great story. You want to hear the story?
Of course.
Okay. So, so I decided like, oh, let's go find a car. So we were kind of looking around, and so we were kind of, we kind of got into the Honda thing, and we were looking at, what were we looking at, Brian? We were looking at the,
Del Sols.
The Del Sols. And on one of my running routes, cause I run and I cycle a lot, and, I kept going by this house, and there was this old, like, 90 CRX SI yard. And it's like, that's really cool. And I started looking it up, and it's just like, this could be a really fun car. So I knocked on their door, and I said, you guys interested in selling this car? And they said, sure. And it was actually, it was an engine swapped car. It had a B series Honda, if you know anything about Hondas in the car. And I made him an offer, and I was going to buy the car the next day. And my wife was talking to a girl who worked for me in marketing. And she said, like, oh, yeah, Don and Brian are going to buy this CRX tomorrow. And she goes, CRX? Oh, well, my friend Tony has one sitting in his garage. And my friend Tony, her friend Tony actually worked for me and lives about a mile away. And his brother bought the CRX, 91 CRX, base model. It was his first car. He loved it. He couldn't deal with selling it. So his brother took it from him, brought it up to New Hampshire from New Jersey, and was going to sell it. Really didn't get around to it. So he was going to give it to, like, I don't know, Goodwill or something like that. And so I said, really? So I called him up, and I said, Tony, I heard you got a CRX in your garage. Can we go look at it? He says, yeah, come on over. He lives about a mile from me. So we go over there. I look at the CRX. It's a base model, but it's a little beat up, but it's basically in pretty good shape. Perfect project car. So I said, like, okay, I'll buy it from you. How much do you want? He says, I'll just give it to you. So we did the traditional, you know, pay a dollar for it to get it onto the, so that you can do the formal purchase of it. So we bought it for $1. We brought it home, and, you know, drove it around, drove pretty good. It was automatic transmission. So I said to Brian, I said, well, Brian, what do you want to do? You could take this car. You could just be your daily driver since you're just getting your license. Or we could build it into something, you know, interesting, like a tuner car, because that's all we kind of knew about. And so he said, what'd you say, Brian? Tuner car?
Yeah, as a 16-year-old boy, or 15 and a half at the time, I really didn't have a choice. That was, yeah, build something cool with my dad. I don't want to be driving around a stock automatic CRX. I want to do something rad with it. So, we put a K-Series in it, converted it to manual, got it painted, bodywork done, did it all up like the cars in the magazines. And actually, it ended up getting featured in Honda Tuning Magazine. But, we didn't really have much direction, just inspiration, but it came out as a really nice piece and well done. And it was a cool car.
It was not specific for any kind of motorsports. It was just a tuner car, which is like, you know, you get the shocks on it. You do the motor swap, and we had a really nice paint job. We fixed everything up. And then, like he was saying, it's like, what do we do with it? So we wound up going to an autocross in 2008 at the end of the season. And did one autocross and said, wow, this is really cool. And kind of got hooked on it. And then kind of took off from there. So, and then continued to develop the car and you know, went from being like really sucky drivers to actually being pretty decent. And then Brian kind of took off and got really good. And the old man here just kind of like hangs out and has fun and works on cars and stuff, but still love it.
That's a great story. And these damn kids, they just, they get so fast so quickly, right?
Yeah,
we started off, he was just as quick as I was, but that only lasted a couple of years.
Yeah, he figured it out. It sucks.
I have youth and reflexes on my side, so.
Yeah, I should have started about 40 years earlier, but what are you going to do?
That is pretty great, though, that you can do that with a car and tune it and fix it all up and then take it out and see what you did, you know, in like all the extreme ways.
Yeah, well, you know, being built as a tuner car, it was really not a very good car for auto. I thought it was a horrible car to learn on because, you know, it had all the wrong attributes, too much power, not enough rubber, the suspension wasn't set up right. So it actually took us a number of years to really develop the car into a really competitive autocross car. It was a very interesting learning experience.
That's kind of half the fun, though. You don't want to get it right too early.
I think part of the fun for us, absolutely.
I mean, if I talk to anybody that's getting started now, I tell them, you know, start in a basic stock simple car and then learn how to drive and then you can move up. We basically started out with a ridiculously high horsepower car that was not set up very well at all. So that probably set us back a few years, but it was fun. Yeah.
I think part of the fun for us has always been developing the car. I mean, driving it is a blast and competing is a blast, but also figuring out how to make something that might not seem like it'll work, or doing things to prove others wrong when they say, oh, you can never do this or that, to go out and do it and execute it and do well with it has always been almost as satisfying as the actual competition part of driving itself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I know that's why Autocross does those test and tune events, even just non-point events, so that you can just try stuff out before the season starts.
Yeah, we did a lot of trying stuff out just for the fun of it and, you know, just to figure out, see what will happen. And, you know, you never know until you try. So testing, you can never test enough, and you can never stop testing if you want to keep that competitive advantage.
I remember seeing that car when you guys first came out. I was pretty new myself then. We were 2 years into it. But I always had a thing for the CRXs. I wanted one so bad. Never got to have one. And that car was beautiful.
It was a total chick magnet car. It was a beautiful paint job. It was that bright blue, and it's like so many. I mean, obviously, a lot of autocross cars aren't necessarily the nicest looking cars, and some of them are kind of beat up, you know, so on and so forth.
This was
a car that was in, you know, it was featured in Honda Tuning magazine. It was beautiful. I mean, we built it to be, you know, fast, but we also built it to look really good. So it was kind of the anti-autocross car.
It was gorgeous. Now, but you just recently sold that, though, right?
Yeah.
Or was that a different car?
I sold it, I think, about a year and a half ago now. But it had a good run. I would say that you would talk to most informed people. And it ran in street-modified front-wheel drive, which, when we started, that class did not exist. And it was kind of a what do they call it, Brian?
It was a supplemental class.
Supplemental class.
The beginning.
And so we were partially responsible for establishing that class as a national class. And I would say that you talk to a lot of people, they would say that, and our opinion is, it was the fastest front wheel drive autocross car in the country. It was crazy fast. By the time we had developed it, it was ridiculously fast, and won a lot of national championships, and not only for us but also for some friends of ours and yours. Right, Rachel Baker won her first national championship in that car.
I forgot about that. That's right. Oh wow.
Yeah.
That car is pretty special. So what was the coming from that? You've done a bunch of other things. And what was the impetus to move away from something that you had built so well and was just, you know, performed and was beautiful?
Street modified class is kind of known as a class where, yeah, the cars are really built to the limit. And, you know, you're talking about a CRX, which was designed to run an engine that was 100 horsepower. And, with, you know, narrow street tires on it, about maybe 195s or something like that. And now you put a 400 horsepower supercharged 2-liter Honda engine in it, along with 275 Hoosiers, and all of a sudden everything breaks, starts to break. So it's a, so basically what you're doing constantly is, I mean, is fix, trying to make the car not to break. So it's a constant effort to do it. And it's kind of challenging and it's kind of fun. I mean, you can see, I have some pictures of me actually welding a subframe together in at Nationals in, I think it was 2014 or 15, you know, sitting there between the two days of events, like welding the chassis, welding the subframe back together. So it got kind of tiresome. And plus it's like, I think we have a disease. We just like to do new things and different things. So we just kind of started to pick up other cars and build other different things that were interesting, and some of them are more reliable. So the next car that we built that was actually very nationally competitive was Brian's Smelvin, which you may or may not have ever seen, but he can tell you the story about that.
Say it again. What was it called?
Smelly.
There's a reason it's called Smelly.
It was my $300 college commuter car bought out of Ben Wagstaff's backyard. If anyone knows him, his dad runs a bit of an auto shop. But it got its name because I basically had to drive it home Ace Ventura style, head out the window, because the trunk had gotten moldy and the smell was so terrible. It detoxed that car, but it ran. It was cheap and it was a set of wheels, so I bought it. And it was my my commuter for a few years, and it was pretty crusty, rusty. And eventually it got to the point, I had, you know, tuned it up a bit. I had put suspension on it. At one point I had swapped the motor in it. And eventually I blew that motor up at an autocross, and the car was getting really rusty. And it's like, well, something has to happen with this car. So it kind of sat around for a while. And, you know, Don and I were at Nationals actually, and we were at the test and tune course. And we had already won street modified front wheel drive at this point, and, you know, been there, done that. And we were kind of getting the itch for something new. And we were watching some e-prepared cars run on the test and tune course. And Don kind of looked at me and said, you know, one of these would be pretty cool to, you know, build out of your sedan there. And I was just kind of watching the cars go. I'm like, yeah, that might be a good time. So I had been stockpiling parts to build something different with the car, and changed my mind. And we turned it into an e-prepared car, got a motor built for it, and brought it down to bare shell, did the rust restoration, new rockers and quarter panels and all sorts of fun stuff. And fresh coat of paint, motor, suspension, did it all up, made an e-prepared car. Again, about a year, build it all. And then went out, did two events with it, and then took it to Nationals and ended up on the podium, and came back the next year, won the class, and then rented the car out the next 2 years with another win and another podium finish with it. So
that was our friend, you know, Ryan Field.
Nice.
So he actually took the car to a national. So this was a 1990 Civic sedan. And in autocross, you know, in prepared classes are basically, you take a car, you strip out everything. You strip out the interior, you get it, you skin the doors, you skin the hood, you make it as light as you can. You can do certain modifications, but you can't like swap engines and stuff. So it becomes an extremely lightweight, primitive car. And of course, sedans are kind of like looked down upon. They're not really supposed to be competitive.
They're not sporty.
And so nobody runs, especially in prepared class, nobody runs sedans. But we had a theory that because of the way a sedan is built, the chassis could be really good for this class. So that was kind of our rationale behind it. And so our next kind of car step into autocross.
Well, it looks like you proved your theory out and then some. That's pretty impressive. The one thing you can't say about Smelvin, though, is that he wasn't pretty.
Yeah, no. It was. It's never been a pretty car, and it's been kicked out of BMW Club autocross events a couple times for things like bumpers falling off and just not looking the part.
Now, where do you guys? I know you worked on the CRX, where do you work on these cars? Like, do you have a dedicated garage, or is it just garden variety, normal garage that anybody would have?
It started off in a normal garage.
Yeah, we started off when we built the CRX, and that was a project we clocked it. It took 333 days. So if you go out and look on the internet, and you'll see the article in Honda Tuning Magazine about 333 days. And it was in a basic standard garage, no heat in New Hampshire through the winter. You know, we had like a little, you know, heater that, you know, could kind of warm you up, and you put long underwear on, you go out and you'd work on the car. So that's where we built all the cars. A couple of years ago, I did build a separate shop garage, which is a really nice garage. So now we have a proper space to work on cars. But yeah, all the early stuff was all done in just the regular two car garage, and all the daily driver cars had to sit outside. Well, all the project cars sat inside. Yeah.
Well, you can't really dust snow off a project car. That's just how it is.
Yep, absolutely. Yep.
All the worthless project cars sleep inside, while all the expensive street cars, live out in the cold and the elements.
So that was the next phase in your progression. What happened after that?
Well, after that, I started to dabble on the track. I started participating in SCCA's Track Night in America program with my 8th-gen Civic Si. Did a couple of those and kind of said, hey, driving on track's fun, but, you know, I can't really afford to go wheel to wheel. And I, like NASA TT or something else, like, seems like a big step. And then all of a sudden, SCCA announced their new forthcoming time trial series. And I said, ooh, this looks like something I could do. This looks like a lot of fun. You know, all the casualness and laid back of a track night event, but, you know, someone's keeping score and it's a competition. This could be fun. So that was 2 years ago was the start of that program. So I decided that in addition to doing autocross, I was going to try my hand at time trials. So started playing with those and started playing on track with all of my cars, pretty much, really. My Civic, my CTSV, and as well as our Miata.
Which one do you like the best?
Ooh, that's a loaded question. They're all good in their own ways. I like the Cadillac because it's terrible and shouldn't have any business being fast, but it is. But I mean, the Miata is just easy and simple and communicative, and I want to say the Miata, but I can't say the Miata because it's too easy of an answer. It is the answer. I can't say it. So I'm going to say not the Miata. Final answer.
Well, the Cadillac is such a sleeper. You look at these cars, you don't expect them to be fast. I've known a couple of people with them, and I was always surprised at the performance level, right?
Yeah, when you write it down on paper and compare it to a Mustang or a Camaro, it's actually better in some ways. It's a little narrower. It's a little bit lighter. It still has a big V8. It's just, it's got a couple of warts. It's got some pretty sloppy stock suspension, and it can't fit a ton of wheel and tire. But if you can work around that and you can upgrade and improve things, it's, like you said, it's a great sleeper.
So for our listeners, we did talk to Howard Miller, was here, oh gosh, it's a year ago now, and he talked a little bit about time trials, right? So just remind our listeners, like, what the format is for that and how that works.
So time trial, you can think of it as, it's sort of an autocross on a road course in the sense that you're competing against the clock for your best time, and there's classes, but you're on a road course. So instead of dodging cones, you're, cutting gears through the track and going for that fast lap. SCCA time trials in particular has an even more autocross style element because it's broken up into three events. Typically, there's a Saturday time and a Sunday time, and they do what they call a track sprint, which is basically a standing start, autocross-style timing lights, and you either run a section of the course, or you run part of the course backwards, or you run a section of the course you haven't done, say if there's a full track and then like an east track or a half track or whatever, you'll run a couple different corners. But, you don't get to drive it beforehand. You don't get a million laps to practice. It's just something you've never seen before. Like at Thompson this year, which is a local track in Connecticut, instead of running the regular course, we ran the drift layout, or they use a, the drifters use a cut across on part of the infield course. So no one, I don't think anyone has ever ran the track in that configuration. So our track sprint was, you have three runs to, you know, cut this course from a standing start and get it done on something you hadn't seen before. And as far as the competitors go, the people who autocross typically get a bit of an advantage in that. So even if they're a little slower on the time trial sections, they can make up for some lost time during these track sprints.
And why is that?
It's because we have that programmed ability to, you know, high intensity, get it done right now on something you haven't seen before. You go out for an autocross run, you know, you've never driven that course before. You know, it was different last week or the weekend before that. But, you know, you have this muscle memory of got to go right now, push the limits, feel the limits without going way too fast. And autocrossers just have a good knack for that. They've figured it out because they do it all the time.
So is this on a track or like a closed road?
It's track.
Okay, it is track. So is there like an advantage to having done a track day on it, or are there people doing this event that have just never been on that track before at all?
I have seen a few people show up who have never done a track day before. That being said, the typical crowd is the people who have gotten into track days or are experienced track days, or you know, even seasoned veteran road racers or, you know, other motorsports participants. But typically, you know, you have some track experience. I wouldn't personally recommend it for your first day on track ever. But if you've done a few track days before and you have a competitive side to you, SCCA Time Trials is an awesome outlet to, you know, get your competitive fix while, you know, still enjoying, you know, a track day and, some, you know, getting some good quality seat time for your money.
Yeah, it is. It is on a track, and it you are on the track with others. It's not like autocross where you're all by yourself. You're on a track. There is passing. So in your group, but it's a very civilized type of passing, and depending on which, you know, they usually break it up into like beginners, intermediate, and advanced. And, you know, the beginners, it's like you can't pass anybody except in certain sections of the track, and the guy that you're going to pass has to point to tell you you're okay to pass him. And then as you get up into the higher levels, you know, you get, it's more flexible. You can kind of pass on more sections of the track and you don't necessarily need a point by, but everybody tries to, the idea of it is you're trying to get the best lap time, single lap time you can in, just like an autocross. You know, you're trying to get one lap in that's absolutely the fastest against the clock. So it's the same idea, except that you're on a track now and you are with other people, but it's a civilized thing. It's not like wheel to wheel racing where, you know, people are manipulating for position and trying to keep you from passing. It's a cooperative event. So it's much more friendly, and it's also much less likely you're going to damage your car, which is, you know, attractive to us because it can get pretty expensive.
Let's not get carried away. All motorsports is dangerous and no motorsports is cheap. But yeah, on the grand scheme of things, compared to wheel wheel racing, time trials is much more approachable. And it, like he said, it's set up sort of like a traditional HPD where you are running on track with people with similar experience level. There's an intermediate, there's an advanced, there's a beginner group. And the same team vibe is definitely pushed. But it's a good time.
How long are you on the track for? Like, is it a certain amount of laps or?
So a typical event is made up of 20-minute sessions or so where you have 20 minutes to set your best lap. More advanced drivers or those conserving tires will go out. They'll do two or three laps. They'll come in and call their session. But over a given weekend, if you wanted to, you get about 2 hours of seat time on track.
Yeah, you'll get in a national like event. You'll get four 20-minute sessions in a day?
Saturday will be two practice sessions, two time sessions, Sunday morning track sprint, and then two more time sessions in the afternoon.
Yeah. That actually sounds like really mentally exhausting.
Absolutely.
Four 20-minute sessions.
Yeah, it's not like autocross where you can show up with a hangover. Yeah.
Yeah. I've done like 7 minutes of karting and I was drained. Like, I can't imagine 20 minutes and then doing that four times a day. Now, if there's, I have a question. If there's multi, this may be something that everybody knows. I don't know. But if everybody is going around passing each other and there's multiple cars on the track, how do you keep, how does each car keep track of its lap time?
So there are transponders on every car. So you have a little device that you know, Velcro or zip tie to, you know, your tow hook or your front bumper or something like that. And it's, there's a wire running underneath the front straight of the track usually. And, yeah, it basically just pings you pings someone's computer in the timing tower every time you go around. So okay. That's how they keep score. And the question of everyone's on track at the same time, but everyone's trying to get a fast lap. SCCA does something very clever where they actually, once the first session is done, they grid you by your lap time. So slower cars are behind you and faster cars are in front of you. So in theory, when you get out there, you know, barring big mistakes or weird things happening, you're not going to catch cars very quickly until a few laps go down and people come in or cool down or whatever. So you actually get a reasonable amount of space to go for your best lap. And you know, if you've got a good lap in and you're cooling down and you see someone coming in hot from behind you and you know they're probably on a good lap, you find a way to make space for them to let them get by, and everyone works together.
That sounds awesome. That sounds super fun.
I was just going to say, this sounds really fun.
It's probably the main reason that I haven't done a lot of autocross the last couple of years. I still love autocross. It's still a great time. I love the community. The intensity of it is almost irreplaceable. It's just, you know, so much action compacted in such a short burst of time. But, you know, the thrill of driving on track is a different experience. It's a little more calculating and slower pace than an autocross run, but it's just as exciting. The community is also excellent. And yeah, like you said, it sounds really exciting, and it is really exciting.
And Don, you were about to say something also.
I forget.
So do you do this also, Don?
Yeah, you know, he started doing it about a year before I started doing it, which was, he started, what, 3 years ago, Brian? Something like that?
Yeah.
And so he said, you know, Dad, you got to come out and try it. And it's like, quite honestly, it scared the crap out of me, the idea of being on track. I don't know, the whole concept of it, I was very, very scared of it. And then 2 years ago during the winter, I mean, I go down to the Honda dealer because I go buy parts for fixing our cars and building stuff. And there was a Civic Type R in the showroom, red. And I'm not a giant fan of red, but I kept looking at it and it kept growing on me. And so finally one day I went up and I said to the sales guy, I said, like, you know, I'm kind of interested in this car. I'd really like to test drive it. And so I'd like my son to come along, and we want to both test drive it. And of course, you know, these things are kind of rare, and to actually test drive the car, you have to kind of sign your life away and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, we did all that and I drove it, and it's like, oh, this is a really good car. So it was kind of a whim when I bought the car. And so then of course, Brian says, like, okay, this is a track car. So now you got to start driving on the track, because they're renowned for being a really good track car. And so, of course, I thought about it, hemmed and hawed, and then I wound up actually signing up for a BMW school, Cabin Fever, I think it's called, which they hold at the beginning of every season up in, this one was held up at New Hampshire Motor Speedway. And it's an incredible program. I highly recommend anybody who ever wants to do any kind of tracks. They have, you basically do classes and they get an instructor in the car. It's a full day thing. It's very affordable. I forget what the cost was, but it may be $300 for a day. But you're talking about an instructor, a personal instructor you get in your car. You get on the track, you get out. You probably get like an hour and a half of track time. You get classroom time. They take you around. So I went out and I did the school. I couldn't sleep for like 3 weeks before because I was so nervous. And I went out and I did it. And it was just like, oh, wow, this is so much fun. So I kind of got hooked on it. last year I started doing some time trial stuff, because there are local, there's local events that are actually, there's a co-sponsorship with SCCA and CART, you know, CART, Connecticut Autocross and Rally Team. Beckinell is involved with these, with them. They're a good group of people. They run events at Thompson, Palmer. And the thing is, in New England, there's so many tracks here. We have more tracks within 100 miles than like any place in the country. We have New Hampshire Motor Speedway. There's Thompson. There's Palmer. What else is there, Brian? There's
Canaan Club, Lime Rock. I mean,
there's Lime Rock.
There's a ton of tracks.
There's Canaan, which is up in New Hampshire. There's the fancy private place up in New Hampshire. I forget what the name of it is.
Club Motorsports.
And I'm probably forgetting one or two. So it's pretty cool. It's just like autocross. You can go every weekend if you want and run, you know, just like around here with autocross, which we're very fortunate. So we have a gray area for motorsports. It's just incredible.
Where do they autocross in Connecticut? Like you mentioned CART, and I think we've talked about that organization before, but I can't remember. But do they do, is it like a parking lot or a...
They have some parking lot events. They have ran track crosses up at Canaan in the past, and as well as at Thompson, I believe. But they mostly run smaller events in Connecticut.
They were at the Big E Fairgrounds this year, though, right?
Correct.
Isn't it them? Yeah. I heard that their events were a lot of fun. Haven't been out to one yet, though.
They're a good group.
Yeah.
So, Brian, currently have Miata, Honda, and the Cadillac.
And Don, a couple more Hondas, yeah.
Oh, do tell.
Well, I've got the Honda. No, so I have the Daily Driver, which I did track for a little bit, is a 2007 Civic Si. I have Smelly, the lovely sedan, the 1990 Civic sedan, the prepared car. And then I have my 1990 Honda Civic Si, which is my hatch crap. It's sort of another restoration build that has been years in the making and
that's hasn't a project. Quite finished. That's been a long-term project, though. That's not on the road yet. Yeah.
But you might actually see that next year. It might get shaken down in a few autocrosses, but it's kind of a spare parts bin build of stuff left over from the other autocross cars to just kind of make a budget, don't care if I put it into a wall, track day kind of car. So I've got that. So those are the three Hondas, and four if you count the Honda scooter. And then I have the Cadillac and the Miata. The Miata is sort of shared in the family. You know, we all steal it and take turns with it, although I've been hogging it this year.
Yeah, the Miata I bought it was a salvage vehicle. So it was declared a total. I bought it and I repaired it. And mainly, you know, my wife, Joanne, right? So she's really been the person who's that's been her primary car to autocross in, but she has not she really didn't autocross last year or this year. So it's gotten turned into a track car because it was sitting there and it looked like it might be fun to track.
Oh, that's hilarious. Because, you know, the first time I saw you out with it without your mom, I was like, hey, what did you do? Steal your mother's car?
It's actually my car, but Joanne was the primary driver of the car for a number of years, and then when she kind of stopped, it kind of got transformed into doing. Brian,
I ruined it. I ruined it. That's what I did. That's what I do to cars. I ruin them. Well, I make them uncomfortable.
It's even more complicated than that. You know Tina, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so she's Brian's cousin. And so she decided she was going to do time trials this year. And she was looking to, like, she has an A Miata, and she's like, oh, because you got to put a roll bar in it in order to bring it out on the track. So should I do something to that car, or should I buy a new car? And I said, Tina, I have this NB. It's sitting in the garage. It's really not getting used a lot. You're welcome to, like, buy a roll cage and some seats for it, and you can do time trials in it. You can help yourself. So she went and bought the roll cage and the seats, and then 2020 happens. And she had some issues, and so she really couldn't get out at all. So Brian kind of took the car over. So it's kind of a, yeah, I guess our cars and our racing is pretty much incestuous, yes.
What's wrong with that?
No, nothing wrong with that. It's kind of fun. Yeah, absolutely.
Do you need a roll cage to do the time trials, or just strictly?
No, just
only in an open top car. Open top cars require roll bar.
Yeah, the Miata, because it doesn't. It's an open top car.
Yeah.
If you're like, you could take your BMW out on the track tomorrow, no problem. Just as it is, you wouldn't need to do anything.
Actually, yeah. I believe convertibles made past 2005 or so don't need a roll bar to participate. So if you have a newer like ND Miata, for example, or a BMW Z3 or 4, you can get away without one. However, safety is one of those things that just because you don't need it doesn't mean it's not a bad idea to think about. The risks on track of something bad happening are higher. And when things happen, you know, the implications can be worse. So safety is never something to take lightly, but, you know, if you're just learning, just trying to get your feet wet, there's nothing wrong with, you know, feeling it out, taking your modern car out without a roll bar or anything like those things, where if you're going to get serious about it, safety is a easy thing to overlook, but shouldn't be.
I feel like roll bars, we could have like a whole podcast discussion on just this, but if you're driving it on the street, and I've just done so much research on this, and it just seems
it's always a compromise.
It's so divided. Yeah, it's almost like if you knew what kind of accident you were going to get into, you know.
If you just wear a helmet all the time, it wouldn't be too bad to have a roll bar.
It's a wicked trade-off.
If you're going to get rear-ended, it's really dangerous. That's what I heard. So
totally.
Sadly, safety works as a system. So if you have a roll bar, you really need a proper harness, a proper seat, a proper head and neck restraint, and a helmet on. If you don't have everything working together, you don't have the system, and you're probably better off with what the OE engineers put in the car to begin with. So my philosophy is either keep it stock. The guys who designed the car and crash tested it know what they're doing. And especially in the modern cars, if something's going to go bad on track, modern safety is pretty incredible. Most people come out all right and stuff like that. But, you know, if you're driving it, you know, an old tin can, like a, you know, 1990 Honda Civic, for example, like having some extra safety gear wouldn't be the worst idea in the world.
Mm-hmm. That's great insight on it.
Yeah, it's putting a roll bar. You're right. You're absolutely right. Putting a roll bar in a car that you're going to drive on the street is that you're putting yourself at risk because you got a piece of steel sitting over your head, so if something happens, you know, that could be the end of you.
But you can also argue that anytime you go out and drive, you're putting yourself at risk. So it's really one of those things of what is your level of comfort.
Yeah,
I always really liked all the events that I go to, whether it was, you know, BMW or SCCA, it's always a huge priority. And it makes a big difference to the overall event.
Yeah, safety is
nobody wants to fill out paperwork.
Yeah, no one wants to fill out paperwork. Right. We want all our friends to go home in one piece.
Yeah, and in track, you know, the speeds are, you know, there's the potential for something bad happening is certainly higher. I mean, even at Thompson, which is a small, track. I mean, you're doing, I mean, in your car, you'd probably be doing 130 down the back stretch, you know, and that's really fast. But like Brian says, modern cars are amazing. I mean, we've seen, you know, you do get people that, you know, it's not unusual in a national event to have at least one car get into something, some kind of a crash or whatever. But, you know, usually it's not really horrible things because, again, you're not in a situation where you're wheel to wheel and people are pushing you and whatever. It's usually you run off the track and you run into a tire wall or, you know, crunch your car up or whatever. But the modern cars with airbags and all the stuff they have in them are super, super good. They're fine for this kind of that kind of event.
There's also the point that no one is forcing you to drive 10 tenths on track. There's plenty of people who go out and enjoy track days or time trials or whatever it is, not necessarily pushing absolute 10 tenths, but pushing the limit they're comfortable with, whether that's seven, eight, nine tenths, five. It doesn't matter. You know, everyone is encouraging and friendly and understands that everyone has their own speed and their own pace. And, you know, take some others on a new track, for example, to get up to speed a little faster than slower than or faster than others. So there's no shame in trying it out. And even if you don't think you're quick or you don't want to dive that fast or, you know, really take too much risk, there's nothing stopping you from, you know, feeling it out.
That's good to know. The kind of that invitation to not go, you know, full out or to match your comfort level.
Yeah.
In autocross, there's, I mean, you can go full out. There's no penalty to do it. It's whatever, you spin out or you hit a bunch of cones. Track, it's a little bit different. So it's a much more conservative kind of driving, believe it or not. And it's in some respects, you know, autocross is, you know, such an adrenaline thing and things are happening so fast. On a track, things are much comparatively slower and smoother. And, you know, your inputs are really smooth and you take your time and you're not like, you know, jerking the wheel and doing this and that. So in a lot of respects, I find, especially at my age, that it's actually a more comfortable thing to do sometimes. You know, it's actually, you know, you got time to think about things and, you know, you're going around the track. And the other thing is you get the repetition. You know, autocross, the challenge of autocross is every time you go out, the course is different. It's really hard. That's really, really hard. That was a really big stumbling block for me, is to actually look and figure out the courses every time that were different, especially at national events. But on a track, it's the same track every day. It doesn't change. And in fact, you can go on the simulators and, you know, you can go online and you can get a driving set up and you can go practice the track, you know, for hours and hours and hours. So it's a very different kind of a racing event, but it's they're both a lot of fun. They're both. And I think that if I were to choose, I think and just observing, I think the people that start in autocross, when they go to track, they do really well. People that start in track and go to autocross, it's a really hard transition.
We've heard that over and over again.
It's true.
I think that's absolutely hilarious.
I mean, I think you can talk to people that observe it. And I think anybody that's unbiased will tell you that's absolutely the case. Yeah.
I love it when the track guys come out and think they're going to crush it at autocross. It's fun.
Yeah. No, I mean, we went to Nationals this year, which is in Bowling Green, Kentucky, which is there's a road course for the National Corvette Museum where they build the Corvettes in Bowling Green. It's uses the test track for testing Corvettes, but they have events on it, and the SCCA uses it for their time trials nationals. And what was my point? I forget. Okay, so
you're boasting about how awesome Newland autocrossers are.
Oh yes. So this year, because they canceled nationals, they canceled autocross nationals. A lot of people that were looking for something to do. A lot of people showed up at time trials, and the autocrossers kicked some ass. They did really well. So
nice. Yeah. Well, we're so used to everything being so like close together. It's like those cones come up really fast. I can see how if you're on the track, you'd be like, I have like an eternity. I have like so long to think about how to approach this.
Totally different. And again, you're not, you know, autocross, you're always trying to drive at, you know, 99.9%. On the track, you don't typically do that. You know, you're kind of running, you're backing off a little. Yeah, every once in a while you want to get that really fast lap in, you're going to push it. But in general, you're going around the track, and again, because you get so much repetition, and you know you don't push it that hard because it's dangerous. Because you can kill yourself, but you can get into trouble. Yeah.
Speak for yourself. I still push myself.
Yeah. Well. For me, anyway. For him, yeah, he pushes it more to a limit.
So we always ask everyone who comes out to the show, what would you have for your advice for novices
I think Brian and I both probably have the same, would have the same advice. I'll let Brian give his speech because he's more of a teacher than I am.
My advice for novices is show up, go out. What are you waiting for? Especially if you're trying to get started in autocross, the barrier of entry is so low. If you have a car that's safe on the street, it's probably, you know, good enough to take you to an autocross. You don't start learning until you start. So get started. The community is welcoming. The people are friendly. And, there's really not that much to it. Just jump in.
Yeah, people overthink it. And they say, I can't go out to an autocross yet because I got to do this to my car. I got to do that to the car. And it's just like they don't get it, you know, that it's 95% driver, 5% car. We know that, you know, but people that are coming into it, they always think that it's the car that makes the difference. And it's not. It's the driver. And it's the driving skills that you learn that make the difference. So get out there in your Volvo station wagon, whatever the heck it is that your daily driver is, mm-hmm. with the all-season tires. And just drive it and learn how to. In fact, that's the best car to learn how to drive in, because they're slippery, slidey. You know, you have to learn car control. It's just, there's no excuse not to get out there in your daily driver.
Yep. Start slow, work your way up, you know.
Yep.
That's a great message. And I liked it how you said earlier to start on a bad tool. You know, we've heard that from many really good drivers.
I know personally, I was my development was set back years because I started on the wrong car. I should have started on a shitbox, you know, some stock, whatever, you know, Honda or Miata, or it doesn't even have to, or just your regular daily driver, you know? Your Hyundai, your Jeep. Really?
Yeah, we've had people on the show who started with some sedans.
And my daughter was autocrossing for a while. That's the other person in our family, but she's in California now. And we had a Honda Fit, and we used to bring it out to autocross, and it was one of the most fun cars to autocross that you can imagine. And it's like, it's something that you, okay, is it competitive? In certain conditions, it can be. So for example, we went to a Porsche event. One of the events some years ago when we had the Honda Fit, and I think I brought the Fit, and Brian brought Smelly. I think Smelly broke. And so it was one of those early season events where it was pouring rain. It was super cold. You had all the guys in their fancy Porsches, and we had this Honda Fit. And did we take FTD?
I think I was second fastest of the day.
In a Honda Fit.
Nice.
You know, it's just to be, you know, because of the conditions, it was cold, they were spinning out and whatever. And it was just a miserable day. But the car was just, it was just so much fun to drive in those conditions. And yeah, it's totally stock. And I think we had just the regular OEM tires on it.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said about driving a slow car fast. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah, and to me, that's probably more fun than anything. And we went to the Porsche Club. They all go to back before pre-COVID, they would all go to billiards afterwards, and you know, I think they gave trophies or whatever. And everybody's like, "What did you do to that car? What's in that car? How did it go so fast?" It's like, just a stock Honda Fit, man.
Oh no, it must be a cheater car.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's kind of the lesson is like, you know, drive anything. It doesn't really matter. Develop your driver skills, and you're better off developing your driver skill in something that's slow and crappy. You're gonna learn more. It's, things are happening slower. You know, if you start with something fast, it's just like, or you start on Hoosiers or something like that. You're not going to learn. It's going to be a detriment. So you're better off starting with something crappy. Yeah.
Yeah. Low limits.
So what's next? What's your plans for the coming year?
More cars, more fun. just going to do whatever seems like a good time.
My plan is I really like I love local autocrosses, and so I'm going to do a lot of local, if, you know, hopefully things get approved next year, I'll do a bunch of local autocrosses. To me, that's, I enjoy that a lot. I've gotten less interested in national events, and we used to do a lot of national, like pro solos and national tours. After doing well, local events, you know, you get a lot of runs in, you know, the people, it's a great community. It's a lot of fun. It's, you don't, you know, for us, it's a 45-minute drive down, 50-minute drive down to Devens. And then you go to a national event, you know, you might be, you know, it's usually none of them are very close here. So for us, it's a big slog to get out there. You get a limited amount of driving time, and it is fun, and you get to meet all, you get to see all your buddies and stuff like that. But they seem to me to be a kind of a slower paced event now than like a time trial event, where you get a lot more minutes on the track. It's a smaller group of people, but it's kind of a new, an upcoming thing that everybody's kind of excited about. So there's less whining, and there's a lot more enthusiasm. So I think my plan would be to do a few time trial national events, do some local track events, and then do a bunch of autocrosses. And if my Civic doesn't blow up again, my CTR, that's mainly what I'll be driving. But you never know, you may break something else out, we'll see.
Well, any parting thoughts, Brian? Any parting thoughts from you today?
No, nothing that sticks out. Well, thanks for having us. Thanks for letting us blab about motorsports.
Oh, yeah. This was great. Thank you.
It was great.
It's fun. Yeah. You guys should go out and try a track night or something like that, especially in your car. That would be a blast.
We had plans this year.
Yeah, I know.
Kathy was going to do her first track night. So was Jess, and we were all going to go back and.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then COVID hit, and
damn it.
Actually opened up. I mean, obviously, I think autocross national events took a giant hit, but the track night stuff and the time trial stuff. I mean, there was some things that were canceled, and changed around, but it was pretty, because the groups are much smaller, and they're at venues that can support the people in, you know, moderate numbers, it wasn't as highly affected as it was, as it did the autocross community, the national autocross community anyway.
Well, maybe this coming year, I hope, fingers crossed, have to try out my fancy alignment that Brian did for me, which, you're right, Brian, much better for autocross. I didn't quite like it so much on road, but who cares? I have a daily driver for that.
There you go.
I like to ruin things. What can I say?
No, you made it worse. Better.
I know. I make things better by making them worse. That's what I do.
Oh, it was really good. So thank you both. Jess, do you have any other questions?
I don't. I'm excited about those time trials.
Yeah, you know.
In my bonnet.
I mean, it's so easy to get it. I mean, track nights, they make it so easy with the track nights. It's almost scary because you go there and it's just like, shit, I never drove on the track before. What the hell, you know? And then they just pretty much send you out on the track. They talk to you a little bit, and they say certain things about what you should and shouldn't do, like how to pass and blah, blah, blah. And then they send you out on the track, and it's like, holy shit. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of fun. So it's a very low stress situation. You just get out there. There's no pressure. You just drive around. And a lot of people that drive it, you get people there that have never done any motorsports. You know, they're just driving on the track, like, you know, whatever. So, you know, at least as having experience as an autocrosser, you know a lot more.
Yeah.
So
I will say, if you like structure, starting off with a program like BMW HPDE is a better way to go. If you're just trying to get a taste, track night's perfect for that. But if you're really trying to learn and grow as a driver, an HPDE like the BMW club offers, or some of the other clubs around the country offer is definitely the best way to go if you want to get into it and really learn and grow.
Really, really good, and they're very structured and comprehensive, and a lot of fun. Yep, worth trying out. not that expensive either.
It's all expensive. It's motorsports. He's lying.
Well, yeah.
Whatever. Yeah, well, we were all definitely not in it for the money.
It's only money. You can always make more.
Yeah. Yeah. You only live once, and if you do it right, once is enough.
Aww.
That is a great way to end. That was awesome.
I think it's the same thing. Sure. Oh, that just made
What are you waiting for?
I love that.
You could die tomorrow, you know? And then where would you be?
Well, I think we have to wrap it up for tonight. Our time is kind of over. Thank you. Thank you again. We really, really appreciate you coming out. And thank you for asking. That was, like, such an honor that you asked to be on. I'm still pretty tickled by it.
I listened to your podcast. Not all of them, but I've listened to a bunch of them. And I said, like, I just think it's really cool that, you know, especially women in motorsports is really cool. And, you know, the fact that you actually have this initiative to go out and, like, you know, do what you're doing, I just think is awesome. So.
Well, it's been fun. It's been a good ride. No pun intended, or pun intended, maybe.
Okay.
All right. Well, good night.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
See you next season.